Radio Shalom. Oi!
Welcome to Eco Living in Action, a half-hour sustainable living show with Maureen Howard. From making your own cleaning products to composting, recycling, keeping chooks and reducing your carbon footprint, Maureen and her guests will inspire you with practical, everyday solutions that make a difference. Eco Living in Action, proudly supported by Sustainable Dunedin City.
And welcome to Eco Living in Action. I'm Maureen Howard. Now, on today's show, I'm in Northern Ireland, and according to the Royal Society for the Protection of Birds, or the RSPB as they're known here, around three quarters of the countryside is farmed. But with the advent of modern agricultural practices, there's been a marked decline in wildlife. We've got natural diverse habitat loss, synthetic fertilisers, chemical sprays, they're all taking their toll. Now, farmer Roy Little, along with his wife Sheila and their son Alexander, are Northern Ireland's biggest growers of leeks. They also produce spring onions, or scallions as they're called here, and a few other different types of vegetables. And although they've got a small amount of their land certified organic, the vast majority of it isn't. But Roy and his family are farming with a difference. They're on a mission to incorporate wildlife-friendly practices into their conventional farming. They're already doing such a good job that Roy received Northern Ireland's Most Wildlife-Friendly Farmer Award for 2016 that's sponsored by the RSPB. Conventional farms and farmers like Roy, I think, are really important because they offer a new model of the kinds of wildlife-friendly practices that can be taken by conventional farmers producing large monocultural yields for supermarkets. On this show, recorded on the 29th of December, I talked to Roy Little about his passion for nature and what his family are doing as Northern Ireland's biggest producer of leeks to help wildlife return to their patch of the countryside. Well, thank you, Roy and Sheila, for inviting me to your home and to your farm.
You're very welcome, indeed.
And so tell me now, nature's obviously a very important part of what you're doing here, protecting it and enhancing it here. Why is it so important to you?
Well, I'm almost 59 years old and I've lived in the shores of Strangford Loch all my life. So Strangford Loch is in the eastern side of Northern Ireland, and we're almost surrounded by water and have a big amount of wildlife, and we're on, it's like a nature reserve type thing. It's an area of special conservation. So I suppose really we've been surrounded by wildlife all of our lives, and as such are interested in it. But really I've only become interested in a deep way in the last 2 or 3 years.
Really? And yeah. Is that through your involvement with the RSPB?
Well, the RSPB came, I think it's 3 years ago, and did a wildlife survey on some of the organic land that we have, and found that there were yellowhammers and linnets, which are two endangered species at the moment in Northern Ireland. So they were quite interested in this, and they asked us would we be interested in helping them to maybe multiply the numbers of those two species.
Right. Now, because you've been farming the land for, you know, over 25 years,
mm-hmm.
and had you noticed a change in the biodiversity or the birds that were on the land over that time?
Well, I suppose, it's, as I said before, I'm only really become interested in them. I know what a linnet looks like now, and I know what a yellowhammer looks like now. Five years ago, I probably didn't know. They were probably all sparrows to me or something. You know, I didn't know. So I have to say that, no, I don't really notice. I notice a difference between my organic land from a farming point of view than my conventional land, because I know that the organic land, once it is converted after the 2 year conversion period, it gets easier to work. I don't know how that makes sense. The soil gets more friable and more easy to work. I'll give you an example. I have a friend who, we have organic land not far away from the farm here, and he ploughs all the land for us as a contractor, and he ploughed a field for us about 10 or 12 years ago, and he came back complaining, oh, that's an awful field. He says, I couldn't get the plough to go into the field, and it was hard, and it was this, that, and other. And we had just converted to organic at that stage, and we grew one organic crop, and then we sowed it down into grass, and he ploughed it last year for me again, which was the first time it had been ploughed since that time. And he rang me just halfway through it. He said, look, He says, I can't believe the difference in that field. He said, and it's been, he says, you haven't, we farmed that organically now for 10 years. And he said, it is absolutely beautiful. He says, it's just turning over nicely here. So, and he says, the amount of worms and other creatures that he can see, even, and the amount of seagulls behind the plough, he said, was absolutely phenomenal. He says, you can plough acres of conventional land, and the seagulls aren't interested. But once he goes into the, I mean, that tells you something, does it not?
It does, it does. And you know, the focus of today's show isn't on organics,
no.
but it is really nice to hear about how beneficial the organic way of doing things is. But now, so you entered your property into the RSPB's award for a wildlife friendly farmer, and you won.
Well, it did, yes. We were encouraged by RSPB to enter. I think what they wanted to show and highlight this year was a fairly successful conventional stroke organic business growing vegetables for supermarket outlets mainly, and employing, we employ about 30, 35 people all the time. They wanted to show that these types of businesses can also do a little bit for conservation, as well as maybe people that are nearly totally focused on conservation. So what they wanted to do was highlight that.
Right. And what do you think was it that swung it for you, that made your property win the award?
I think one of the things that I think was important to them was the crossover between our organic and our conventional land as well, to show that we were doing these conservation type things on our organic land to start off with, but we'd actually brought some of the, like for instance, the grass margins that we keep some grass margins in our conventional land as well. And one of the side effects that we have found out from this has been that we have reduced soil erosion greatly, in that we would be harvesting in some of these fields nearly every day of the year. It's not as if you go in and harvest one day and then that's it for 2 months, and then you go in and harvest again, like silage or even grain, once a year. But we would be in the field every day with Land Rovers or things like that. And so what it has done there is you have a grass margin around each field, which, while it gives insects for birds in the summertime, which is great, it also stops the vehicles bringing out the soil and the muck onto the road in the wintertime.
Yes.
So we find that to be a really good side effect. So,
and also because you're quite near the town of Newton Ards, and so there's a lot of urban traffic going along that road that you're on.
Well, it is something that the urban people are less tolerant of than they were 30 or 40 years ago, I think. I mean, we have had the police at our door on occasions to say, look, we wouldn't go and sweep that up.
The blame comes to your doorstep.
Well, it does. You know, but having said that, this is one thing that we have done with the grass margins that has definitely helped that. There's no question about that.
Right, right. So we're just in the vehicle here, and we're heading to another section of Roy's land that he's renting out. But he's just, you're making the point, Roy, that that it's better if people rent a bit of extra land so they can rest their own land.
Yes, I think one of the practices that has sort of fallen away in the last few years, maybe not so much in Northern Ireland, but I know certainly in mainland England, would have been rotation. Crop rotation, to me, is probably the most important single factor in farming, and this is where people's over-reliance on chemicals comes from. They maybe get a particularly nice type of land or piece of land which suits a certain crop, for instance, and say, oh yes, we're going to put, say, cabbage or leeks or whatever it is in that piece of land, and we'll do it for years and years and years, but because they know they have the chemicals that will maybe control the number one, the pest problems, and number two, the weed problems or the disease problems that they're going to have in that land. And they know they're going to have these problems because they've had them historically. To me, they would be far better given that piece of land 4 or 5 years of a rest, going to another piece of land which wouldn't have these inherent problems in it, and then maybe coming back to that bit of land. And the old-fashioned way that was done 40 or 50 years ago to rotate land. People in mixed farming in those days rotated their land naturally. If they had 50 or 60 acres of land, they grew a bit of grain, they had some pigs, they had some sheep, they had some cattle, they had grew some potatoes, grew some, you know, that it was a natural rotation. But we've come away from that, and that is part of the reason, I think, for the great reliance on chemicals. Now, we actually keep a note of the chemicals that we use every year, and have got a target which is less and less and less, and we have actually hit that target in the last 5 years in a row. We have cut our chemical usage by using wider rotations, and actually another thing that we do is reduced rate chemicals. Go on to a crop maybe a bit earlier and reduce the rate, and it works every bit as well. So really, that's how.
So explain that again. You spray a bit earlier.
Well, for instance, if we sow leeks, for instance, some people would wait until they know that they have a weed problem in the leeks. The leeks maybe would be 3 or 4 inches high and a lot of weeds, and then they have to go in with a really, really, really heavy dose of chemical to kill the weeds. What we would do is wait until the leeks were just maybe coming up through the ground and put maybe a 10% rate. And maybe less than that. I've seen us putting on maybe 5% of the rate that you're meant to use on that, and it actually kills the weeds just as well at that stage. It's just a new technique that we have developed over the last few years.
But it doesn't kill your growing.
No. Well, the point is you're only using 5%. Of the chemical that you're allowed, that you can use later on. So no, it doesn't. It doesn't do the leek or the whatever it is, whatever the crop is, any harm at all. And we have been able to achieve, and we've actually increased our acreage over those years from about 100 acres to 150 acres of vegetables. And we've still been able to cut down our chemical usage in each of those years by using these techniques. But I think probably the rotation is the biggest thing, because we don't have disease problems, really, or pest problems as such. No, we've got weed problems. But you tend to have weeds that you can control quite easily. If you keep on growing a certain crop in a field for 10 years in a row, there'll be one weed species which will build up in that year, and in those years, which will be hard to control. So really what we do is put another crop in, and then, as I say, the weeds are stopped in their tracks.
Right, yes. Excellent. These are all practices that are very, very good. So we're here at the land, and so we're going to have a look and see what wildlife-friendly practices you've got in place.
Well, in this piece of land that we're going to look at now, this is a field of parsley, which is herb, which we use for processing company that we supply, and they chop it up and make it into like a soup, a broth soup type thing. And there's actually herb celery in here, which is a thing that's quite unique to Northern Ireland, I think. It's like a table celery, but it's actually a biennial plant, which comes, if you cut it off, it'll grow again as such, you know. So what we want to show here is the grass margin that we have around this field, which, as I say, is good for wildlife, but it also helps us in our efforts to stop bringing soil and helps our soil erosion.
Yes, so I see lovely clean roads here.
Not too bad. If we go over here, you can see over here where we have a nice grass margin. Watch yourself.
I'm glad that you gave me a pair of gumboots.
Well, I sort of anticipated this. So if you look here, you can see where we have got this nice grass margin here.
Yes.
And so that's really, really good for summer. That would be sown. As soon as we sow the field of produce, then you've obviously got sort of 5 or 6 metres around the outside, which is generally would just sit as soil. But what we do is sow an Italian ryegrass in it, which is a very, very fast growing ryegrass. And it's actually quite cheap. The seed's quite reasonable. So we can go along, and that's a good...
So it grows up quite high, does it?
Well, it does. That one wasn't sowed a lot early. I've seen it growing so high that we have to mow it. Sometimes, you know, go around with a mower and mow it down. But this is a great cover for insects in the summertime, and then the little birds can come along and feed in those.
And, of course, you see, the hedges are a very important part of
of wildlife and biodiversity in Northern Ireland, that, you know, for the birds nesting and so forth?
Well, we tend to have a lot of hedges in Northern Ireland, actually. We would have, I mean, average field sizes are quite small. I mean, your New Zealand audience will laugh at what I'm about to say, probably. But, I mean, we would have 5, 6, 7 acre fields as a norm in Northern Ireland. I mean, a 10 or 12 or 15 acre field is still a big field here. That's 4 or 5 hectares. It's still a big field in Northern Ireland. But a lot of the fields, we have field we're standing in here is about 7.5 acres. And there's good hedgerows right round, as you see, right round the whole mm-hmm. field. It's a good south-facing field, which we use for early cropping. But yeah, yes, we tend to have, which is why, to speak against maybe the conservation thing, a lot of people in Northern Ireland would say, look, why are you worrying about this conservation and this bird conservation? Well, sure, there's plenty of hedges, you know. And you have to say, yes, there are more hedges than there are other places, but there's certain species that struggle, as far as I can understand, anyway. There are certain species that struggle even with the hedges and the habitats that we've got. So we're just trying to enhance those habitats.
And your hedges look good and healthy too, because maintaining your hedges is also really important, isn't it?
Yeah, well, we try not to cut any more than about 3 or 4 years, about the 3rd or 4th year. There's a whole lot of reasons for that, and that there's a cost implication. Every time you cut them, there's a financial implication. And I don't see any reason to cut them any more than every 3 or 4 years. I suppose maybe they look slightly tidier, but I think 3 or 4 years is enough, and that lets them bulk up nicely. You don't want to, you need to cut hedges because they get very woody and very open at the bottom if you don't cut them at some stage. But I think every 3 or 4 years is a good enough time.
Right. And so is that how you maintain them? You haven't relayed any of your hedges?
No, I haven't. We have planted some hedges. We've replanted some hawthorn hedges. But no, laying hedges, funny, I was at a course last winter about hedge laying, and it's something that interests me, but I've never done it yet. No, I haven't.
I'm looking at it on my mum's property.
Yeah, no, it's very... No, we've got a neighbour that does quite a bit of it, but it's quite a slow process, and it's quite an expensive process too. So unless you were able to do it yourself or something, it is a nice thing to do. But no, we do plant or maybe space up some hedges with hawthorn, just with local type.
Oh, so you might interplant a little bit, put a little. Oh, that's a good way to do it. Yeah.
No, that would be the best. That's the best. You'll see, whenever we go back home, you'll see a place that we did at home. We had to increase a sight line for one of our exits onto the main road. So we had to take out a hedge, but then we planted just back another 5 or 6 metres to give a good sight line.
Right. So
we've replanted the hawthorn hedge, which is a native species here in Northern Ireland.
That's great. That's great. Well, now I can hear the birds in the background.
Yeah.
So we're going to head over to a different part of your farm where you've really, it's kind of like a food feeder for the birds.
It is. A small field of wild bird cover, which we have put in some of our organic land just a mile up the road. So we'll head there now.
Okay. Right, we're back in the Land Rover again, and we're heading to the organic section.
I think it's quite good for a conventional or stroke organic farmer of a fair size to leave maybe a couple of acres for this sort of a job every winter, because there's always somewhere that's not that terribly productive or is awkward to work. It's the corner of a field, and there's always some pressure. And going back to what I said beforehand, unless you've got a fairly good crop of produce nowadays, you'd actually be better not starting to grow that produce.
Yes.
Because it's going to cost you, financially it's going to cost you money, never mind make any money. So you'd be actually better, the more marginal little bits of land that you have, I think, would be good for this. Now, there's no government incentive at the moment. Now, they're starting to introduce a little grant system at the moment, which I'll give us a little grant for doing a wee bit of biodiversity like this. So I think that's coming on in the next few weeks. So we've arrived now at the field. It's up here, so if you want to, release yourself from the seatbelt. This field, we sowed, it was it's an organic field, so we had to make sure that the seed that we put in it was at least 65% organic.
Yes.
Organically certified, because I wanted to hold on to the organic certification of the field, even though we were going to put a wild bird cover crop on it. So it's linseed, triticale and oats are the three crops in this field. Now, as we look at it now, all we can see, we had a problem with the oats and the triticale, I think. We have a very, very, very small cereal content in this field. I think we got an awful lot of crows come in after it was sowed for a start, and I think they probably took most of the cereals. But there's a fantastic linseed.
Yes, probably, I see lots of linseed.
And you can see all the wee seeds on the linseed.
Yeah.
So the RSPB fellas have got very excited about this. They have thought this is a really, really good field of linseed.
So what size is this field here?
This is only 2 acres.
That's big enough.
Well, it is big enough. Now, generally, we can see little flocks of linnets floating. I was here yesterday afternoon, actually, and there's a lovely little flock of linnets. If I stay a wee while, you're probably a better trained eye than
I know. I know linnets. I don't see any at the moment.
Yeah, but there are certainly some about, and as I say, yesterday there were plenty, but that's the way it is. Whenever you want them to be here, they're not here.
Yeah.
But there certainly is, and we've seen some yellowhammers over the last little while as well.
Yeah.
So this is a nice south-facing field. There's actually quite a bit of hedgerow around it. This is a good example of hedges that we haven't cut for, then that one hasn't been cut for 6 or 7 years probably, you know. Mm-hmm. So whenever I say every 3 or 4 years, that's a sort of a general rule.
And
it's
you
not,
let the hedge itself get quite wide.
No, we try not to let it encroach into the field as such, but it would be its full width, you know, maybe a metre and a half wide, each hedge it would have. No, we try not to let, we need to think of the financial aspect as well. But as I say, this field is a particularly nice south-facing little field, but it's not great for working with good big machinery. It's quite small, and there's a few little corners in it and one thing and another. So I thought this would be an ideal place.
Right.
And it's so close to the little school, I thought it would be really good for that educational aspect.
And so you've permanently left this for the birds?
This is an annual crop. This will have to be ploughed up again in the summertime. And I think we'll just do the same again next year.
Right, it's a bit of a new experiment.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
But I think I'll try and keep this field for that for a couple or 3 years.
Yeah.
Anyway, hopefully we'll get the cereal content a wee bit better next year.
Yeah.
It wasn't really our fault, I suppose, in a way, but certainly the crows or whatever it was, they had a field day in it.
And do you think that there's any benefit, let's say, to your broader farming practices of leaving a bit for nature, or is it something that just makes you feel good, or do you think there is a wider benefit?
I don't know from a point of view. I think this is maybe going to sound very selfish in a way, but I think one of the wider benefits is a lot of our customers are very environmentally focused, and if you can show that you're helping in any way, helping the environment in any way, I don't want to mention any particular names, but there are a couple of our customers that are very, very focused on environmental issues and environmental friendly farming, and I think that helps from that point of view. I mean, if we are doing that, and if we are doing this, and maybe some other people are less sympathetic to this sort of thing, I think it helps us. It helps our argument.
Yes.
That's purely selfish. Or I don't know. Maybe.
Well, but I think, you know, as a business, you do need to be doing things that benefit you, but benefit the wider environment. And as you say, I think customers are shifting, and people I guess people have found out more about the negative aspects of monocultures on our food system, and they want to support a farmer who is actually doing it a bit better.
I think certainly in Northern Ireland, the customer is they're very, very short time removed from agriculture of some sort. I mean, you, for instance, say you're from a farm not far away from us, and you don't have to scratch very much on the surface of any person that you meet in Northern Ireland to say, oh, my uncle was a farmer, my uncle did this, or my grandfather did that. You know, you don't have to go very far. So people have an interest in their food in Northern Ireland, and people, especially recently, are sourcing local produce. And they're really, really, there's a big, big drive in Northern Ireland for local produce, especially since our vote to come out of the EU in the last year or last few months. I think that has focused people's minds as well. I think the volatility of the pound against the euro and a whole lot of different, there's people that are just maybe getting a little bit more interested. And we do a little bit of food service, which is hotels, catering establishments, and they would be very much into trying to source local produce because, well, it's not to keep us in business, it's because their customers are demanding it. Mm-hmm. So it's not really that, as I say, my customer, for instance, some of the supermarkets really are that interested in it, but they can see that the actual demand's coming from the consumer base, and that's where it has to come from. The demand has to come from there to make them want to source it. But I have to say that our customers are very, very focused on local produce at the moment. Mm-hmm. So as I say, the customer is certainly getting more aware of what is grown and produced here in Ireland.
So your plans for the future here, you're feeling pretty excited about all the wildlife friendly stuff, and you're going to keep it going, aren't you?
Oh, I am going to keep it going, and I think we've got this little 2 acre field of wild bird cover. I have another field which I've in my eye for maybe next year, and we'll possibly do that as well, and there's some wild bird cover, and we'll certainly keep the grass margins going, because they are, well, it's just part of our farming job now at the moment. I mean, we've integrated that into our farming practice, so that's, I'm not going to stop that. So, and I say the hedge trimming is just stay the same as it is, and no, I don't intend to do a whole lot more, but I definitely intend to keep on doing what we're doing.
Yeah, oh, that's great, Roy, and well, thank you so much for inviting me along, and it's great to meet a farmer who's doing that bit extra.
Thank you very much indeed, it was a pleasure to meet you.
And thank you for listening. I'm Maureen Howard, and today I was talking with Roy Little, Wildlife Friendly Farmer of the Year from Northern Ireland. If you'd like to listen to this show again, you can download it as a podcast from the Otago Access Radio website at oar.org.nz. Eco Living in Action is sponsored by Sustainable Dunedin City. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you next week.
Sustainable Dunedin City aims to facilitate a positive, secure and sustainable future for Dunedin. We're local people interested in issues of climate change, declining energy security and sustainability. Is they affect our city? Sustainable Dunedin City produces a regular online newsletter of sustainability related events, hosts regular green drink sessions and organises the Big Green Challenge. For more information or to join, go to www.sustainabledunedincity.org.
Groans at least 6 times a day. Keep them logs rolling, boys, down to the Milky Boys. Keep them logs rolling down, for we'll drive the crosscuts through just to show what we can do. We'll pave all the streets of London town. Sweats and strains most all day. Down 20 miles a track to feed the mill. Stoker keeps the firebox full with the offcuts from the day, so that later on she'll make that 3 mile hill. The mill first does strip and bark the logs, and sends them to the benchman standing by. He slips the mill saw through, never mind what slips and pokes. It's then that you'll see the chips and the sawdust fly. Keep them logs rolling, boys, down to the mill me boys. Keep them logs rolling down, for we'll drive the crosscuts through just to show what we can do. We'll pave all the streets of London town. Ship away. When the weather's fine, they'll be down.